Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Because I don't want to ever miss another chance. It's just not going to happen.
A North Pole man is waiting for another chance at a heart transplant after winter storm stopped the first. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 6th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, a replacement for former Assemblymember Forrest Dunbar is officially selected.
I'm here for about 100 days. I'm going to try and accomplish what I can within that time frame.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Build rockets, study wildlife, code robots, and work with kids in after-school programs across Alaska. Now hiring full and part-time STEM coaches through AmeriCorps to engage elementary-age students in science, technology, engineering, and math. Do meaningful work and gain professional experience in education. Apply online at akafterschool.org/AmeriCorps or call 907-248-7379. This message is sponsored by the Alaska After School Network.
Governor Mike Dunleavy banned the use of the social media app TikTok on all state-owned devices today. In a press release, Dunleavy referenced national security concerns about the app, which is owned by a Chinese tech company. Last month, the FBI warned Congress that the Chinese government could potentially use TikTok to collect American users' data or control their devices. Dunleavy spokesman Jeff Turner wrote in an email that the state is not aware of any security breaches caused by TikTok at this time. He said the governor issued the ban as a, quote, preemptive measure. According to the press release, all state entities are banned from downloading or using the TikTok app on state-owned devices or visiting the TikTok website on the state network. The governor's announcement did not mention any specific enforcement measures for keeping TikTok off of government devices. However, Turner said the state's information technology officer regularly monitors network activity and security to enforce such policies. Last month, President Joe Biden approved a similar ban on TikTok on federal devices. More than a dozen states have also passed TikTok bans. Meanwhile, an Alaska judge said Wednesday he would lift an order that had blocked elections officials from certifying Representative David Eastman as the winner of a state House race after ruling last month that Eastman, who is a member of the far-right group Oath Keepers, is eligible to hold the seat. Superior Court Judge Jack McKenna made the comments during a brief hearing a day after the plaintiff in the case challenging Eastman's eligibility filed notice that he would not appeal McKenna's December ruling that found that Eastman is not disqualified from holding office. Eastman, a Wasilla Republican, won re-election in November, but McKenna had earlier ordered that certification of the election be delayed pending trial and further order from the court. The trial, overseen by McKenna, was held last month. The new legislative session begins January 17th. A North Pole man is back at home this week after missing his own heart transplant because of ice storms in Seattle. KUAC's Robin reports.
56-year-old Patrick Holland says he's too young to die. He's been suffering from congestive heart failure for much of his life.
So I had my first heart attack at 29 years old.
He says heart disease runs in his family.
But, you know, my dad died from it at an early age. His brother, my uncle, died at 48. It's been taking the lives of my family for a long time. And, you know, all my brothers and sisters have heart problems. A couple of them had triple bypasses, you know. So it's definitely hereditary.
3 years ago, doctors told Holland he needed a transplant. His heart's now twice the size it should be.
My biggest thing is I go into what's called V tachycardia, where my heart just doesn't want to beat anymore. It wants to vibrate because I've had so much damage done to it by the heart attacks and cardiac arrest.
It took months to become eligible for a transplant, a time spent repeatedly flying to Seattle for dozens of tests at University of Washington Medical Center.
They checked my lungs, my kidneys, my gallbladder, my digestive tract. Man, they put gauges in my neck to check the pressure to my heart. They checked my arteries in my legs. They did ultrasounds and brain scans, looking for tumors, looking for cancer. You even see a psychologist and see if you're mentally prepared for this. My mind was, man, I hope I get through all this testing before I die.
Holland's family had considered a temporary move to Washington, but Patrick is healthy enough to travel the four-hour direct flight to Seattle. And who knows how long he would be on the transplant list before a heart actually became available for him.
It was just incredible that I got a call 2.5 weeks after being active.
The transplant coordinator called on Thursday, December 22nd, and said they had a heart that was a perfect match for Patrick, but he would need to get to University of Washington Heart Institute within a day. He and his brother booked an evening flight to Seattle and arrived in the airport in the midst of a holiday travel crush complicated by stormy weather.
I immediately just jumped to the front line and I apologized to everybody. I said, "Ma'am, I'm looking to get a heart transplant and my plane boards in 30 minutes. And she said, "Oh my gosh, get over here." And she immediately pulled me to the side, started looking, and she said, "Oh no, your flight has been canceled." And I was just, everything left my body.
Seattle was having one of the worst ice storms in a decade, and freezing rain briefly closed all three runways at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Holland says Alaska Airlines agents managed to get them on an early Friday morning flight to Seattle.
I was comfortable, and I was happy, and I was excited. Most of the fear had gone away.
It looked like he would get his new heart.
I felt the landing gear go down while my brother was sleeping next to me, and I heard the pilot say, "Welcome to Anchorage." I looked at my brother and I laughed and I said, "He must be really tired," because at this point it was like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I just figured, no, we've been in the air 4 hours. It does not take 4 hours to get to Anchorage.
The ice storm in Seattle had forced the plane back to Anchorage, and Holland missed the window to receive the heart transplant.
I'm just so, just broken. I lost that heart. Man, I was so emotional like I've never been. I mean, it was like I just lost. I felt life just leaving my body forever. I mean, I was so spent on so much emotion, up and down roller coaster.
2 weeks later, he's packing to leave his wife and four children in North Pole and move to Seattle to await another suitable heart.
Because I don't want to ever miss another chance. It's just not going to happen.
He tells everyone who wishes him well to be thankful for what they have and to register as an organ donor. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Anchorage Assembly picked Joey Sweet today to take over Forrest Dunbar's seat until the April election. Dunbar had represented East Anchorage since 2016, but is now headed to serve in the state Senate. Assembly members chose Sweet from a pool of 5 applicants. To win, a candidate needed 7 out of 10 votes, and it took the Assembly 3 rounds of voting to reach a consensus. Sweet says he saw his chances as slim, considering another candidate, Harry Crawford, had a decade of experience in the legislature.
I was really overwhelmed. You know, I'm not going to embellish and say, like, this was expected at all. This wasn't even hardly on my radar.
Sweet, who's 30 years old, is a former student regent for the University of Alaska, appointed by Governor Bill Walker. He also served as a legislative intern for former Democratic State Senator Berta Gardner. He currently works at Angeles Memorial Park Cemetery as an office administrator. Sweet says homelessness is among the top issues he'd like to address as an assembly member, as well as another rarely discussed item in Anchorage politics, the use of facial recognition technology, particularly by law enforcement.
I don't think that the technology works. I think that it is discriminatory in how it is used. And I want to protect civil rights and civil liberties.
In April, voters will decide who serves the remaining 2 years of Dunbar's term. Sweet says he intends to treat his time on the assembly as a full-time job, but he has no intention of running in the election.
I'm here for about 100 days. I'm going to try and accomplish what I can within that time frame.
As the youngest member on the assembly, Sweet says he also hopes to better represent the voices of younger Anchorage residents. Assembly members will hold a similar meeting on January 19th to fill a seat representing Eagle River and Chugiak. Jamie Allard of Eagle River was also elected to the legislature and will serve in the state house. Chugiak Eagle River residents looking to fill her seat can apply between January 10th and January 17th. The filing period to be on the April municipal ballot will be from January 13th to January 27th. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the dogs on this Skagway bus go woof, 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 and viral.
It's like Jake, he walks in, gets in his own seat. Amaru's outside, sitting on the curb.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.gov. health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Nethka Kuge Taja Ravels lost a lot of her things when someone broke into her Juneau home last month. But the theft of her grandmother's regalia was the most devastating. Police arrested Juneau man Anthony Perry for the burglary this week, but the regalia is still missing. Ravels says the regalia represents an important piece of Huna's history and some of the few things she had left from her grandmother. Erin Calwera with the Juneau police said the investigation isn't over.
There's always hope. We haven't stopped the investigation. They're still following up on leads and still working through things.
Revel said she feels hope, too. A lot of that comes from the support she's received from investigators and the Juneau community as a whole.
I'm just really humbled at the amount of caring and energy that folks have been putting into this. And it does help me have hope and keep hope that the regalia will come home.
Police also arrested Perry for a break-in at a local business in early December. He's been charged with 7 theft and burglary counts related to the break-ins and additional charges related to his arrest. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for January 12th. Meanwhile, Alaska's population increased just slightly into last year, despite a decade of more people leaving the state than moving to it and higher deaths during the COVID pandemic. The state released the new population estimates yesterday. The data covers a year-long stretch from July 2021 to July of last year. During that time, Alaska's total population increased by just 451 people. David Howell, the state demographer, says that although more people still left the state, the more than 44,000 new arrivals were a bright spot.
So we actually had our largest number of in-migrants to the state since the 2012 to 2013 period between 2021 and 2022.
Another good sign, the difference between the number of people moving out versus moving in has also shrunk in recent years. Meanwhile, deaths in Alaska remain high due to COVID, with 6,424 reported statewide, nearly 40% more than 2 years ago. Alaska's population also grayed slightly, with the share of Alaskans 65 and older increasing by 5%. As for the region with the highest median age, that's the Huna-Angoon area in southeast at about 49 years old. The youngest is the Kuzovik census area in western Alaska with a median age of about 24. Howell says overall it's too soon to tell whether the state has bounced back from the throes of the pandemic.
We're clearly seeing some pent-up demand for moves both for Alaska and nationwide. Domestic migration is up quite a bit. But it's hard to, well, impossible to say, really, that if these trends will continue.
The Mat-Su Borough is the state's fastest growing region with the population rise of 2.4%. Just a disclaimer, the following story describes sexually based crimes that may be disturbing for some listeners. A former substitute teacher in Wasilla is accused of sexually abusing 2 young children at a home in the area last month. Court records show 31-year-old Scott Anthony Pizzini was arrested Thursday on 3 counts of sexual abuse of a minor. A charging document against Pizzini says troopers were called the day after Christmas to a home he'd been staying at since September. Troopers say Pizzini admitted to sexual acts with 2 7-year-old victims, and he was immediately removed from the home. A Mat-Su Borough school spokeswoman said Pizzini worked as a substitute teacher from October 2020 until last month. She said she could not provide information about which schools he worked at because it's a personnel matter, and said the district had no further comment. Troopers say Pizzini may have had additional victims. They ask anyone with information on the case to call them at 907-352-5401. Meanwhile, Ketchikan's Borough Assembly has pledged to give the local school district a reprieve after earlier threatening to bill the school district directly for healthcare expenses. It's the latest development in an ongoing dispute between Ketchikan's Borough and school district over healthcare payments. Premiums paid by the district and its employees have not kept up with the cost of healthcare to the tune of more than $5.2 million as of the end of December. The borough, which administers the district's self-insurance program, had previously threatened to stop cutting checks for school district employees' health care costs at the start of this year. But as KRBD's Eric Stone reports, Ketchikan's Borough Assembly is backing off that threat for now on 4 conditions.
Ketchikan's school district must minimize the growth of its health care debt for the rest of this school year and stop the debt from growing by the start of next fiscal year in July. And it has to come up with a multi-year plan to repay the debt and agree to face consequences if it doesn't. Those are the four conditions of an agreement reached between borough and school district officials. Borough Assemblymember Grant Echohawk applauded the agreement. He said it would address the problem and prevent it from happening again.
I'm confident that my colleagues here at this table and also on the school board are all very concerned about this. And not only does this agreement help us get a solid footing to move us forward, but there's continued communication built into it.
School district officials had warned that if the borough stopped paying for health care expenses on January 1st as planned, they would be forced to make immediate cuts to athletics, tutoring, and other programs. And even that likely wouldn't be enough, they said last month. Borough officials are concerned about the spiraling costs of health care for teachers and staff, saying last month that the school district's accumulating debt was threatening the overall financial health of the borough. Assemblymember Jeremy Bynum supported the agreement, though he said he wasn't sure how enforceable it would be if the school district continued to lag on health care payments in the next fiscal year.
I think it has some pretty good language in it to address a lot of the concerns that we have. I believe this is truly a leap of faith, if I could use those words, in the sense that this is only a memorandum of agreement. I question the legality of how binding it actually is.
He added language to the agreement aimed at preventing the school district from asking for more money for operations outside the usual budget process. That passed 5-1 over an objection from Echohawk, who argued it was unnecessary. The agreement itself passed unanimously. That was one of three assembly votes aimed at alleviating the healthcare budget crisis. In another, the assembly voted to increase the school district's budget by about $700,000 to pay down some of the healthcare debt. That also passed unanimously. But the third proposal, which would allow the borough to spend an additional $1.9 million to keep up with the district's health expenses, faced opposition from the mayor. Borough attorney Glenn Brown explained that the measure was necessary to ensure the borough didn't spend money it wasn't legally allowed to. Assembly members unanimously approved the appropriation in the first of two votes on the measure, but Dial said he planned to veto it later this month unless the school district provided a detailed budget to the assembly. He accused the district of dramatically underfunding its health insurance program against the advice of its insurance broker.
If I can't see your budget, the detailed budget, then I can't verify that you're accurately reporting your finances. If I can't verify, I can't approve. That's my responsibility as mayor to this community. If the district has nothing to hide, then they have everything to gain from transparency and working with the borough.
He accused the district of stonewalling borough officials' request for a line item budget detailing exactly what the district spends its money on. He said appropriating the money could leave the borough unable to weather emergencies like the resurgence of the COVID-19 pandemic or an economic downturn. He suggested modifying the measure to require the district to cut spending. He said that would put the district on a path to repaying the debt. The $1.9 million appropriation is scheduled to come back to the assembly later this month for a final vote. If Dial vetoes the measure at that point, a 5-member supermajority could override the veto at the following meeting. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
Each year, Dr. Lindy Jones and his wife Colleen say they'll stop making little cradles in the shape of boats for newborns in Juneau, but each year, they keep making them. It's a tradition that took root back when Lindy delivered babies at Bartlett Regional Hospital, where he said he formed deep connections with parents. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
The couple, who've been woodworking together since college, makes one of the little rocking boats for the first baby born in Juneau each year. They also make them for nurses and friends when they have children, about 4 or 5 boats a year. Lindy is an emergency room doctor now, but when he was working in the delivery room 20 years ago, he found he wanted a way to acknowledge the connections he formed with parents who were experiencing infertility and challenging pregnancies.
You know, there are certain families that I had a connection to, and kind of being with them through the process, and it was a way just to acknowledge that for myself and for them, I think.
The couple builds adult-sized boats, too, like the 30-foot fishing boat they started last January.
2x6, or 2x, would be blue?
Standing in the Jones' wood shop and guest house, which they also built themselves, Colleen Jones points towards the hull, recently coated in resin.
And it usually has a table saw.
All my
tools
are in
here. This is usually the woodworking room, and it has been transformed into a boat. And all the...
Colleen says she spends about 4 hours a day in the wood shop, working on their bigger projects and on the gifts the couple gives out around the holidays.
I mean, it's one way that you can just share something at the start of the year, I think, for somebody special and, you know, new life, whatever.
They used yellow cedar for this year's baby boat, grown and cut in Hoonah. Lindy has been working with Wes Tyler, the owner of Icy Straits Lumber, for years.
But he actually, this year, donated all the yellow cedar for the boats.
The baby boats are labor-intensive. At one point, the couple stopped building them for about a decade. But Lindy says it's not wasted time for him.
Shop time doesn't count against life, you know.
Lindy said he feels deeply committed to Bartlett as a place of work, and that drives him to keep making and gifting these boats.
It's given me an opportunity for the most challenging, fulfilling career I could ever imagine.
This year's boat went to Ethan Weed, Juno's first baby of 2023, born on January 3rd. Lindy says he never plans to sell anything he makes, and he plans to have their new fishing boat ready for the outer coast by king salmon season. In Juno, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
Skagway is home to an internet sensation, a wife and husband dog walking team that makes videos of their daily routines. On New Year's Eve, they hit the benchmark of over 1 million social media followers. KHNS's Mike Swayze reports.
Good morning, Jake.
Well, good morning.
They call themselves Mo Mountain Mutts, and the videos they make of their operation have gone from viral to national news. Based in Skagway, Mo Thompson started small, taking friends' dogs out on walks during lunch breaks from her job.
I started working with some teachers at the school, and it just kind of was a ripple effect of, hey, I heard you're really good with dogs. Can you help me? Hey, I heard you're really good with dogs. Can you help me? And then I needed a second pack walk because I started grouping dogs together by their personalities. So we had our morning crew and our afternoon crew. And then it just grew to the point where I needed some help from Lee.
Lee is her husband. The couple has an 8-month-old baby boy named Vern, who also goes on walks every day, unless the weather is too cold. Mo says she loves those days too.
Because we usually have everything to ourselves. Nobody's usually outside, and we can play the in and the out game. I usually leave my vehicle running, and the dogs can kind of come and go and warm their little toes up in their seat and come back out.
The couple bought a passenger bus from a local business last winter, but their passengers are all dogs.
Lee and I together are just a couple of goofballs. So Lee just started pointing the camera at me, or he would have a silly idea on the bus. And that's really what went viral.
They hit 1 million TikTok subscribers on New Year's Eve, so they popped some champagne and a new bag of treats for their dogs. One video has captured more attention than the others. It's received over 45 million views on TikTok alone.
That's the dogs getting on the bus. It's like Jake, he walks in, gets in his own seat. Amaru's outside, sitting on the curb, waiting for the bus. Bama just gets in, lets the dog sniff her, mingles back to her seat, and then Slade just comes like flying on, jumps in the seat, and starts making out with Otis.
People have started making fan edits, placing themselves on the bus. Lee and Mo both admit how lucky they are to do something they love for a living.
I look in the rearview mirror of the bus as I'm driving sometimes, and I just see all the dogs back there. I'm like, I can't believe this is what we do for a living.
We say that all the time. I can't believe this is my job.
The couple operates their puppy bus year-round and doesn't plan to expand operations. But they do hope to make a bit of extra money through TikTok and expand into monetizing YouTube videos. Mo is also hosting web-based training sessions. The website is MoMountainMutts.com, where they sell merchandise like their yearly puppy calendar. They've recently done a national interview with CNN and were contacted by The Rachel Ray Show.
Good morning, Amaru. Hey, you're not buckled in.
Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
Spraznikum. In many homes across Alaska, Christmas trees stay up through mid-January in celebration of Russian Orthodox Christmas, which falls each year on January 7th. There's days of feasting and praying and starring. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that after 2 years of relative quiet due to the pandemic, parishioners on Kodiak Island are ready to welcome back the tradition.
In Aleutic, the practice of starring is known as slawik. Parishioners twirl wooden stars covered in colorful tinsel as part of church ceremonies. The stars are then taken from home to home within the community. Carolers follow, singing hymns and packing into houses to eat and visit with loved ones. In the Russian Orthodox faith, the star symbolizes the birth of Jesus Christ and the Star of Bethlehem. Spirit in Ash is a reader at St. Herman Theological Seminary in Kodiak.
And there's just beautiful local foods that are served, and elders might speak, address the people in the home. So it's just, there's so much richness to this in community, richness in faith.
Starring originated in Ukraine, where it's still practiced today. For centuries, it's also been a celebrated tradition in Orthodox communities across Alaska. Father Vasily Fisher is a dean at the seminary. He says people are excited about this year's slawik, particularly after not being able to gather for the last few years.
It's a wonderful expression, especially this anticipation of this year. I think most villages have been closed up because of the pandemic the past few years. And from what I've seen on social media is the anticipation of preparation.
Starring can go on for up to a week, and sometimes stars will travel to different villages. Many communities have their own customs. Some parishioners will exchange gifts when the star visits their home. Others sing different songs. Father Vasily says where he's from, near Bethel, carolers and the star visit the local cemetery.
It's also a season where we remember those of our loved ones who passed from this life.
He says that's taken on new meaning since the pandemic began nearly 3 years ago. Russian Orthodox Christmas services begin in Kodiak on Friday and run through the weekend. And starring will take place throughout the villages on the Kodiak Archipelago and in homes within the city of Kodiak. Ash says the whole community is looking forward to it.
It's a very heartwarming time. It brings back so many beautiful memories. And it's just a beautiful time to recognize the reason for the season.
It's also a time to celebrate being together once again. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Robin in Fairbanks, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Mike Swayze in Skagway, and Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.